B-Pod Studios.
Yes! Hello, my broken brigade! 'Tis your great leader, Broken Matt Hardy! And you are currently listening to Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast with two wonderful blokes, James Stewart and Mike Riley. Yes! Let's get into it and listen to the Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast!
Wrestling Inside the Ropes this week is brought to you by the Wilbur. Jim Ross presents his Under the Black Hat book tour coming to the Wilbur on April 16th. For tickets and information, visit thewilbur.com. We'll have more relating to Jim Ross and his book tour as the next few weeks go on. But Mike, let's start with All Elite Wrestling's Revolution pay-per-view event, which happened on Saturday. The big story for me coming out of this show is Jon Moxley is the new AEW champion. He defeated Chris Jericho following a double-arm DDT. He took off his eye patch and then hit his kind of jumping DDT for the clean pinfall in the middle. And credit to Randy Couture, because he coached up Jon Moxley for this match, as was documented in the AEW Countdown show. Moxley had counters for the Boston Crab, for the Judas Effect. If you watched that Countdown show, it actually tied into the pay-per-view, which is an amazing thing. Mike, Jon Moxley is your guy. He's been your guy since he hit AEW. Has your excitement calmed since Saturday night? Because if it goes for more than 4 hours, you need to see a doctor.
I just got out of the hospital right before recording here, and thankfully my blood pressure is pretty good. So Jon Moxley, I really didn't think he was going to win this match against Chris Jericho. I thought that they would push him back for a little bit and Jericho would hold on to the championship for at least a few more months. But this was a darn good match and told a good story here. Even the interference with Guevara during the match as well. It just gave you that whole little, like, uh-oh. And it obviously really made it all clear that, yes, Jon Moxley does not have any friends. But at the end of the match, the victory, numerous times by Jim Ross, at least 3 to 4 times, cannot wait. We're in for a great ride here. We're in for an exciting ride with Jon Moxley. Really building him up here as the champion, obviously. And telling us that, okay, this is going to be interesting here. He's probably going to hold the AEW championship for at least a few months and maybe until their next pay-per-view with the Double or Nothing, I believe, right? That's the next one?
In May, yeah.
So a little time here at the minimum. But this was a darn good competition between two gifted superstars. And you know what, James? I took away from this as a big middle finger to Vince McMahon, because it's two guys that he had on his roster, and we know the whole story where at the time Dean Ambrose and then Jon Moxley was on Chris Jericho's podcast around this time last year, and they were both at the top of the WWE at one point, and here they are at the top of AEW for the championship to become the second AEW champion. AEW is saying, screw you, Vince. Look what you had, and now you don't have it anymore. This is how we do things here. This is how we put everyone at the top of our platform. So that's what I took out of that, too.
Mike, I thought your excitement level would be a little bit higher than it is. I'm a little taken aback. It must really have you must have taken some downers or something, because I was like, I was full bore waiting for, like, yeah, Jon Moxley, got him. Yeah, Jon Moxley, Jon Moxley, Jon Moxley, and just, like, cheerleading it. Like, you know, when Charlotte wins her 11th championship, I'm going to be insufferable. You know, and I kind of felt like you were going to be this way with Moxley, you took a more measured celebratory approach.
Yes.
I've taught you well.
Yes, I'm a man of the people, James.
That you are. You'll never say no to a photo.
That's right.
So I thought it was a good match, made a lot of sense. There were certain spots in the match that all tied in together, whether it be from the training session, which I mentioned, or just into the story. The eye patch coming off at the end was good because it was, Moxley was playing mind games with Jericho in the Inner Circle, things like that. I think Jon Moxley is going to be a very interesting champion, but I disagree with AEW and Tony Khan taking the championship off of Chris Jericho. And it's because Chris Jericho in the ratings, the Wednesday night ratings war, hasn't lost a quarter hour since AEW hit TNT. And part of and there's an example of this past Wednesday night where the head-to-head, it was dominance for Chris Jericho over the Charlotte, Chris Jericho and Jon Moxley weigh-in versus the Charlotte Flair Bianca Belair match.
Yep.
To the point where when AEW ended, over 200,000 TVs went from AEW to NXT to watch the end of NXT. Once NXT ended, most of those televisions went back to AEW's Revolution preview show.
Right.
So there's a big AEW Jericho love there. And also, Jericho's presentation is being the champion, La Champion, selling merchandise, all that stuff. So I look at Jericho as like the champion, the number one guy. So I disagree with this decision, but I think I understand it. I think Jericho is going to be on tour sometime in April with Fozzy. And so rather than, oh, well, we're reaching the date where Jericho goes on tour with his band, so now it's going to be predictable when they take the championship off him. Because this one, I think, was a pick 'em. I think I picked Jericho, but then I looked at how the card was going to shape up, and I'm like, this could be a villainous card winning everything, and that's generally not what they do.
Right, right.
So Jericho losing was a surprise to me, but they did everything right. Moxley beat him clean in the middle. Good for them. I disagree with the decision. I would have kept the belt on Jericho for at least a year, probably a little bit more, and I would have had him lose it to Kenny Omega, but they're going to try Jon Moxley as the champion. And some research that I have to get into, but Dean Ambrose's drawing power and match quality was questionable in the WWE. So let's see what Jon Moxley has.
Yeah.
Like I said, I think he's an interesting person to put the world championship on. He's the number one good guy right now who can be the champion. So I'm hopeful. I am optimistic about this run for Jon Moxley.
You got to give him a chance.
Absolutely.
Give him a shot.
Because I think the reason why he was given the WWE championship was because Roman had a wellness violation. And they didn't want to put it back on Seth, so they had Dean win Money in the Bank, and they tied it all together.
Right, right.
And I'm also not sure Moxley needs the AEW championship.
No, and I was thinking the same thing, too. It's like, does he need it and so forth? Like, you could really have him run with that whole character, how he is. And then I got to add, too, that entrance he had was fantastic. I love him coming in from the street. The Jericho one was awesome, too.
Jericho one was awesome.
Oh, two really good ones.
We'll have that at the end of the show. I'm going to tack that on to the end of the show. I'm going to have the Inner Circle Choir on the end of the show. It's great stuff.
Inner Circle Choir. I love it. Yeah. But yeah, he very easily could go without a title. But for AEW to roll the dice here, give it a shot, see how he does, really, you're in pretty good position. Even if Jericho is not the champion, you still have a good one right there with Jon Moxley. So give him a chance. And it's going to be interesting to see who. I mean, I'd imagine that Jericho is going to want the grudge match. Jim Ross did tease on that broadcast at the end of the match that Moxley gets him again. Moxley gets Jericho again. You know, he had him in the Inner Circle and then bails out. He screwed him up with the eye patch. He lied about that, obviously. Fibbed about it, I should say. And then he wins the match right there. So you got to think they're going to have a rematch at some point. Maybe the Blood and Guts big show there at the end of March. That could be another grudge match right there. So I'm very excited to see what's going to happen here with Jon Moxley.
So the next challenger is going to be very interesting. And I wonder if Jon Moxley, on an improv during his post-match media scrum, might have tipped his hand a little bit.
Okay.
And he said that he doesn't care about the stipulation that Cody can't challenge for the AEW championship.
Cody Rhodes, who has put himself in a scenario where he can never get a world title shot. I'm just thinking of this because I literally just walked by him in a hallway. But I'm not going to play that game. I'm not going to live in a world where, you beat everybody but except for Cody because he had that thing with MJF and all that, so he couldn't get to it. Well, if he feels like he can beat me, he better damn sure expect to get in a ring with me, and we're going to waive the little rule because I'm not living in a world where he gets to... that's a cop-out. That's a way out. If he thinks he can beat me, I insist he give it a try. Because if he can beat me, I don't think he can. But I want to know. And I want to find out.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So maybe between now and May, the MJF-Cody thing gets figured out. And Cody, because Moxley has thrown out the stipulation, becomes the next challenger for the AEW championship. Just a theory.
Okay.
I thought the AEW... I'm just trying to think. I thought the AEW World Tag Team Championship match of Kenny Omega and Hangman Page defeating the Young Bucks to retain the titles was one of the best matches, one of the best tag team matches I've seen in a long time. And what struck me was the crowd being so behind Hangman Page. The Bucks got booed. Omega's reaction was a little iffy, but the story of this battle of four really good friends was the Bucks, as the match was going on, became more and more villainous, which was great. They did good wrestling to begin with, and then Hangman spit in Matt Jackson's face, and it was on from there.
Just
a fabulous match. It's available on YouTube if you didn't watch the pay-per-view, but you should go out of your way to find this match and watch it. My description of it just won't do it justice, but the post-match, they told so many different... There were so many elements in the middle of this match, if you know their entire backstory. But after the match, Omega gave a reluctant handshake to the Bucks. Page refused it, left the ring, and then teased a buckshot on Kenny Omega.
Right.
So the dissension still remains within the Elite. And I thought that the Bucks should have won here, but the match was amazing. The teases, the move, the whole thing was just excellent.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Mike, your thoughts?
Yeah. Yeah, a 5-star out of 5 match. Fantastic. And right now, it's my early match of the year candidate because, you know, as we said, going into this match, they all know each other very well. So we're in for a treat on that one. This is what AEW, I thought, the epitome of it. I keep going back to that interview with Tony Khan last year talking about the heavy tag team efforts here. And this is right up there, the epitome of what he wanted for the promotion of the tag team side of the AEW, and this is right up there. Now, could the Young Bucks, should they be champions? And I think they should have already. However, I think what we're seeing here, still putting others over, does Omega and the Hangman have to be put over more? Maybe not, but, you know, the Young Bucks will have their time, and when they do become the champions, it's going to be that extra sweet. Again, match of the year candidate going up onto the ramp to suplex after suplex there. Just so many good moves left and right.
You're referring to the Jackson Northern Lights suplex to another Northern Lights suplex to another Northern Lights suplex on Hangman Page, and then they turned it into an Indy Taker driver on the ramp.
Exactly, which was awesome. And then, you know, Nick went through the table, too, for the near fall after that. It was so exciting. Just a great – and again, like you said, with the heel feel to it, it felt like the Young Bucks were having the heat on them. They were having the heat from the crowd. I'm like, I'm not really seeing that right now, but the crowd was perceiving from their vantage point that the Young Bucks were the bad guys. And I'm like, wow, okay. So that was kind of interesting, too, to take that out of it. But this was a damn good match. Like Jimmy said, go watch it on YouTube. Check it out and really put your feet up for this one. It's a darn good match.
What they have done with Hangman Page since the beginning of the year is tremendous. He went from... He's the challenger for Chris Jericho's title at the first official AEW championship fight, their first pay-per-view in Chicago, where a lot of hardcore fans, they know Hangman Page and so on and so on and so on. You didn't even remember that you were at one of his matches, right?
That's right.
So I use that as an example to make the point that the hardcores know who Page is. But the casual fan is like, okay, like Jericho should wipe the floor with this guy, right? Because we don't know who he is. Or we've heard of him, but he's not at that level yet. So what they did was they stuck him in a tag team with Kenny Omega. And since the beginning of the year, they've put him in different situations. Mm-hmm. And they make him want to drink beers with the fans and things of that sort. And they have given him personality. They have given him personality. And now you're getting the emotional connection that all these characters need. So it's an excellent job by the Bucks, by Kenny Omega, to give him something that the crowd can either cheer or boo.
Exactly. And just great character development all around here. And it's, you know, again, he could to work with Kenny is awesome, but, you know, eventually maybe go back to that one-on-one, you know, maybe main event caliber, but definitely one-on-one category in the AEW promotion. So
And that's probably where it's going. I mean, the end of this is going to be a Kenny Omega Hangman Page match. I mean, that's
oh yeah,
that's where they're going with it. Whoever beats them for the titles.
Right, right. So, but this was a damn good match. Match of the year candidate.
I read a lot from the internet on, you know, how great a match this was. I thought it was a fabulous match. But to me, it's one of the better tag team matches that I've seen in a while. But you have the Usos and the New Day, and there was a Hell in a Cell match, and then there was a TLC match in Boston with Usos and New Day and Lucha Dragons, and, you know, the Rockers and Tully and Arn had classics, and the Hearts and the Bulldogs and Edge Christian, the Hardys and the Dudleys all had great house shows, pay-per-view matches, the Midnight Express, the Rock and Roll Express. This is in that conversation with a lot of those matches. So
it's up there.
It's good stuff.
This puts, you know, not that AEW hasn't had some good matches over the first year of existence, but this is right up there. Top three for them.
And so that transitions to a match that I think was a massive, massive miss. And that was MJF versus Cody. MJF won, and it was the right call for MJF to cheat and win. He used his ring as a pair of brass knucks to knock out Cody and pick up the win. The hug on Cody, the spit in the face. Cody hits two crossroads, goes for a third. MJF blocks it, pulls out the ring, hits him, gets the pin. Right finish. 100% the right finish. MJF should go over and win this match.
The match
format was brutal.
Okay. All right.
I'll give him mine. Please disagree with me, please. Please, Mike, please disagree with me.
Go ahead. Go.
The match, in my opinion, should have been an all-out beatdown by Cody or an aggressive, hard-hitting, personal fight. Instead, we get wrestling holds and a standard match, and we had a arm bar and a overhand wrist lock, and no. This should have been a jump start. This should have been Cody. Cody should not have been played to the ring. Cody should not have gotten a neck tattoo 2 days before the show. Just so many like logic holes in this. Remember we were talking about NXT and you know, the women's match where there were two friends and one of them jumped the other one on the walkway out? That's what should have happened here, and it didn't. It was wrestling match, and then you know, and then a transition to try to make it more aggressive where MJF is biting Cody's toes. That shouldn't have happened.
Yeah, that was weird.
Shouldn't have happened. So, Mike, you liked this match?
I thought it was, yes, because I think it's going to continue the storytelling here between these two. And MJF, you know, for what Cody had to go through here with the lashes and then the cage match to get to that point to where he was in this position against MJF. And MJF, too, the blood that he took right there, you know, the beatdown and so forth. And it just, I'm going to tell you right now, the moment I knew that MJF was going to win the match was when Brandy threw the beer on Wardlock.
Yeah, okay? Wardlock.
Wardlock, right on
the Warlord and the Barbarian, the powers of pain.
Right. Then I'm like, you know, he did nothing. So unprovoked, throws the beer in his face, and I'm like, okay, that's it right there. I just know MJF is going to win this. And sure, Arn Anderson gets involved. Cody then, you know, goes after him unintentionally, of course. And it just, again, sets up another potential
Or was it
here.
Intentional?
Well, I don't know. It could be, because that's going to be really cool to see with Arn Anderson potentially, you know, maybe saying, all right, you knock me out for the good chunk here and go after him at some point, officially turn on him at that particular moment when it did happen in that match. So I love the storytelling in this. It wasn't, like you said, you weren't too big on it, but listen, I think it sets up so much more opportunity for these two to continue the good rival that they've built up here. And maybe you get more of, you know, get Dustin Rhodes in there again with Cody and have a tag team match with MJF and Wardlock again in a bigger stage to have these guys go at it more often. More Cody and more MJF together. It's a good product.
I think both Rhodes brothers had bad nights. I think Jack Hager, Jack Swagger should have just blown doors on 50-year-old Dustin Rhodes. Like, just two bad misses. Like, it took you 20 minutes. It took Jake Hager 20 minutes to beat Dustin Rhodes. And don't get me wrong, Dustin's prime worker. Love his work. He's been one of the best in the ring, probably an underrated performer in his career. Or a performer who was at his level who should probably get a little bit more credit. That's a, you know, good. He's not great, but he doesn't suck, but he's better than maybe he's led on to be. But I thought both Rhodes brothers just missed on the laying out of their matches.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Just a huge miss.
Cody definitely had the better night over Dustin. He had a better night than Dustin.
So you like the fact that they did arm bars and overhand wrist locks and
it was all storytelling. That's why. It was all storytelling.
But isn't the story that it's a blood feud? Like Cody had to get all the way to these steps and now he has his opportunity and he couldn't and he just was like, I'm going to go get a neck tattoo the day before and let's start off.
That bothered a lot of people.
And that's a cheap shot. Like, that's his body, and he should be able to do whatever he wants. That's a cheap shot by me. But I have to make everybody drink. But to get in the ring and lock up and do, like, a headlock and an arm bar and a, you know, overhand, like, it just doesn't play to the story that was being told is Cody wants death on this guy. Death is a little strong, but he wants to get his hands on this guy because he cost him the world title. And it's like, oh, let's go lock up.
Right. Right.
He got whipped 10 times. He got put in a steel cage match with this giant. MJF spit in his face. MJF throws in the towel, costs him a world title.
But
and it's like,
also,
oh, let's get in the ring and let's lock up. That just bothered me.
Well, when it's all said and done, MJF won cheap here. He had the knuckles. Same way, the immediate thought I had was Macho Man winning against Tito Santana in the Boston Garden with the Intercontinental title 1987 or 86, whatever the hell it was. Same exact scenario there. I was like, wow, here we are again. In that same right there going into the tights, cheap shot there. So Cody has the upper hand on him there to continue this rival. I love the storytelling between these two. No issue with it. Give me more MJF. Give me more Cody. MJF, I think he's the best heel right now. Maybe, but definitely in AEW, but possibly all of pro wrestling.
MJF should be in the title fight against Jon Moxley in May. That should be your pay-per-view main event.
Sure. I have no issue with that. I'd be fine with that.
That should be it, unless they're doing Cody, but I think they should do MJF. There's an opening here for a Cody heel turn.
Absolutely. There's so much opportunity. And with Arn Anderson, too, and, you know, Brandy back in the picture, no need for all three of them there.
The other note that I want to mention from AEW's Revolution pay-per-view is Orange Cassidy. Mm-hmm. This kid is fabulous, and it's really a lot of people's first time seeing him on this type of stage, but this crowd was into everything he did. And I was kind of shocked that Pac played the game with him. But I just love how Cassidy went from the soft style to the aggressive, fast-paced moves. It was a good match. The crowd loved it. My favorite moment of the match was Orange Cassidy rolling in and out of the ring multiple times to stay away from Pac's top rope finisher. On the third attempt, Pac stopped him by going to the other side of the apron. And if you look at Pac's facial, like, he smiled. He's like, okay, I get it. This is fun. But this was a lot of fun, and this was a good little before the championship fight match to throw in there. I loved it.
Absolutely. And, you know, the fast move between Orange Cassidy, just so athletic. Really exciting guy to watch. And you know, not main event caliber, but it was a high entertainment for a pro wrestling match. And, you know, a Pac right there, here he is. You know, we all remember him in the WWE days, but now here he's getting that shot there in the AEW to reinvent himself. But Cassidy, the Orange Cassidy, just like, he's so over with the crowd. So over. Great reaction.
So different. He's so different and unique, and that's why.
Yeah. People love it. So I thought it was great all around. So exciting to watch. Good for him. Good placement of this match, too. Very good placement.
Yep. They did a good job. And Pac's this serious, like, I'm going to beat everybody's ass and this, that, and the other thing, and he played the game. Smile. So kudos to him. Mike, any other notes from AEW show before we transition?
You know, just speaking to someone before this show on Saturday, with the AEW, they thought that this could be the WrestleMania for AEW, and it's a pretty good one. Not gonna hide behind that. Definitely their first pay-per-view of 2020. We'll see how Double or Nothing can do in May. But this was really good stuff, a good product put out there by AEW. And again, the four pay-per-views a year, best model to go by.
Yeah, great storytelling. It's a good model, and hopefully they keep to it. And I love the Saturday night thing, because Saturday night you can have a few people over, have some drinks, not worry about what you're doing on Sunday, and go from there. So I like the Saturday night model.
Just like a boxing match on a Saturday night.
Yeah, and if the right opportunity is, you know, there's an option for a travel.
Absolutely.
Which I would love to go to Vegas, but that's not happening right now.
Well, you went to Chicago.
I did go to Chicago. It was awesome.
Yeah, so that might be on my in my cards. We'll see.
Yeah, Labor Day weekend. You can do SummerSlam weekend, and then you can go do an AEW show all within a two-week span. I can't do that this year, but...
Yeah,
you know, it would have been on the table. Hey, I almost went to Toronto last year for SummerSlam, but
did you? Yeah,
yeah. I have visa issues. I can't get back into my home country. What can I say?
Well, they allowed you here in the U.S. Not too hard to get into. That's
their mistake. Before we get to the WrestleMania match that we all think you should watch, we each pick one every week on our road to WrestleMania, which I think is 4 weeks away. Yep. WWE was in Saudi Arabia for their Super Showdown, and William Goldberg, defeated The Fiend for the Universal Championship. They came to Boston. They landed at 2 a.m. Roman Reigns stepped up as the next challenger for Goldberg's championship, and that match will take place at WrestleMania in Tampa. John Cena came back to TV in Boston. He closed out SmackDown. Paraphrasing, he wasn't sure when his next match was going to be. He wanted a youth movement for WrestleMania, even though there's holes within that whole promo he did, but I digress. So he put the mic down in the ring. He walked up the ramp. He was saluting the fans of Boston on his way out. Lights go out. The Fiend comes out. He points at the WrestleMania sign. John Cena tips his cap in accepting the match. Of course, staying true to his character and never backing down from a fight, but taking a spot from a younger wrestler who he didn't want to take the spot from in his promo before. But that's Bruce Pritchard's writing, or Vince McMahon's writing. That's not John's problem. Right. Mike, I like the adjustment that WWE made to its WrestleMania card. We kind of talked about it the last few weeks on the show. I guess The Fiend isn't buried. He isn't forever dead like the internet thought he would be in the aftermath of losing to Bill Goldberg in Saudi Arabia. What have you made of this entire pig orgy that's going on, the shuffling of the WrestleMania card?
So let me just get this straight. You're okay with The Fiend going up against John Cena?
Yes.
Okay. So what I, yes.
You are not.
No, I'm not.
Okay. Continue.
The internet here blew up after he drops the title to Goldberg in Saudi Arabia. So here we are again. Part-timer goes and becomes a new Universal Champion. Do I have an issue with Goldberg being champion? No. Do I have an issue with him being champion going into WrestleMania? Yes. So that's where I would have liked to have seen The Fiend to hold on to this title here. Again, I think you had a real good opportunity to build up that character and just, I don't know. I just hope that I very easily could see John Cena winning this match against The Fiend. And here he is. He's going to lose two matches in a row on a big stage. So that's going to start to demoralize him. Does John Cena need this win, or does The Fiend need this win? I think now you've put the pressure on The Fiend to need the win more than ever to continue the strongness of his character. And if he doesn't, then you're going to start to see him be underappreciated and definitely underutilized. It's just absolutely killing the character there of Bray Wyatt, which they've done over time. So I hope that I think it'll be best for business if, you know, The Fiend wins, but there's no title on the line here. It would be much better if John Cena were going up for a championship, but he's not. So I think it would have been better to have Roman Reigns take down The Fiend, Goldberg go up against John Cena, you know, just in a regular match, and then Roman Reigns could take down The Fiend, like I said before, at the WrestleMania, maybe second to last match of the night or whatnot. But Goldberg versus Cena, we have not seen that. That would have been cool. Two legends right there. They threw that away. Didn't do it. I don't like it. Don't like it.
So I wanted them to do Cena versus Goldberg, but when you take a step back, right? Like the Fiend versus Roman Reigns was the original SmackDown Championship match, right?
Yep.
So by taking the title off of The Fiend, you're putting it on Goldberg versus Roman, which is a video game match, which is going to appeal to a lot more people, right? The ratings for the segments that Goldberg have been on have been higher, much like this whole nostalgia thing that's going on across wrestling. You know, Conrad's podcasts are all nostalgia. They're all doing well. WWE is popping ratings when Hogan's on the TV and Ric Flair's on the TV and Goldberg's on the TV. So for WrestleMania, they want all the eyes humanly possible on WrestleMania. So this is going to become a common theme where they're just hot-shotting things here, there, and everywhere. But what WWE did on Friday night was a stroke of genius in that now Goldberg does his promo. Roman comes out. He says, I'm next. They walk off. They announce that the match is official. And what it did was they kept it short, and it allows Roman Reigns not to have to walk into Philadelphia to try to win an Elimination Chamber match to face Bray Wyatt. So you're saving this thing for Roman where he's going to win at WrestleMania, which we all assume he's going to, and you've taken out the men's singles match, which we all knew the outcome of, because they were going to put somebody that they shouldn't put in there that's going to get cheered and not get the reaction that they want, or they're going to line it up with Baron Corbin, Dolph Ziggler. I love Dolph. We love Dolph. But he wasn't winning that match. Bobby Roode, Lucha House Party member X.
Throwing guys.
Right? Just people to make sure that you cheer Roman Reigns when he wins. So instead of that, you've taken the men's chamber out and the predictable winner, and now you have a tag team elimination chamber? Miz, Morrison, New Day, Usos, Heavy Machinery, Lucha House Party, Dolph and Robert Roode? That's a win. That is a massive win in the short term in trying to get where you want to go. The Elimination pay-per-view is a week from yesterday as we're taping this on Monday night.
Like 6 days out.
Yeah. So, like, would you rather see Roman beat a bunch of tomato cans or actually see, like, a hell of a tag team match that's just going to be chaos? And Roman versus Goldberg is a more interesting match to me than Roman Reigns against The Fiend for the title. We know the outcome, right? We don't know how they're going to get to that outcome.
Yeah, and to your point here with everything going on with Roman Reigns and, you know, the fill-in, the throw-in match at the Elimination Chamber, it does make sense how they did it. I get it, because who's the one guy that you can officially get Roman over with again? I mean, obviously
a WCW guy, Mike. A WCW guy.
And where is it going to happen at WrestleMania? So Roman will do it there. I'd imagine they would bring up him coming back from the lymphoma, which is, you know, remarkable as it is. But I just think that it's going to – that's how – the best way they can do it to get him over and be the champion on the grand stage again at WrestleMania. So I don't agree with it, but that's what we're looking at for April 4th or 5th in Tampa Bay.
It's April 6th because it's Charlotte Flair's birthday. I think it is. I don't know. I just tried to say it with enough confidence where people would believe it.
I got to double check now because
it's April 5th. It's April 5th.
Yeah,
it's Charlotte Flair's birthday.
But 4 weeks away. Here we go.
Yeah, 4 weeks away. As far as the John Cena Fiend match, I think John Cena is going to do everything within his power to make sure he loses that match. And the question is will Vince McMahon let him?
Well, Cena did put out a tweet tonight. Did you see that?
Yes, but I don't. If you give me a second, I will pull it up.
I'll read it to everyone real quick.
Go right ahead.
I want to thank WWE and Fox, and more importantly, WWE Universe, for such an emotional experience in SmackDown. I went to Boston to say goodbye, but realized that no matter where life takes me, WWE is always home. Now on to WrestleMania. From what I read from that, you know, character standpoint or not, John Cena, he definitely has one foot out the door. You know, if he is to lose, would this be his last match? You know, you go out like that to Bray Wyatt, that or The Fiend, that could very well be it. But that you could tease that if he does lose, put in the program, that's a retirement match for him. You could do that. So maybe that's a tease right here that we're about to see.
Or maybe John Cena is now The Rock, and this is The Rock's, or this would be John Cena's equivalent to a WrestleMania 20 match, where The Rock came back, teamed up with Mick Foley, did the match with Flair, Randy Orton, and Big Dave Batista. Mick, of course, ate a pinfall against Randy Orton, but I think if John has his way, he's losing to The Fiend, and probably quite decisively. In the same way that John Cena was allowed to put over The Undertaker quite decisively in New Orleans.
Well, as he should have.
But I just think that as this has lined up, The Fiend versus Roman and John Cena versus Elias is less than John Cena versus The Fiend and Bill Goldberg against Roman Reigns.
Exactly. Well, I get that. I do understand that. However, you know, you could very don't read it between the lines here. For a programming standpoint, this could be a retirement match for John Cena, and it might be announced this week.
Do you know something?
Informed opinion.
Informed opinion that Tampa, WrestleMania in Tampa is going to be John Cena's last match.
It could be. It could be. From that tweet, they could.
No. You back up. You said informed opinion. So who have you been talking to? You don't have to say who you've been talking to, but you feel like John Cena's last match, Tampa versus Bray Wyatt, The Fiend.
It very easily could be.
Okay.
Don't be shocked. Don't be shocked.
You've backed off from that.
No, well, I'm playing the safety net because I don't want to.
Mike,
you know,
it's okay 100%. To be wrong. My feeling is that I would rather be entertaining than always right.
It very might be his last match. We'll see.
Kenny Omega still regrets not taking Vince McMahon's 5-year, $25 million offer.
I know. Yeah, it could happen. But you know what? I mean, WrestleMania next year is in L.A. Maybe you get Cena and The Rock in that one. You never know.
I would say that you're getting Roman Reigns versus The Rock for 37, and you're getting Ronda Rousey versus Becky Lynch for 37. Los Angeles, you got to do it.
No, book my flight tomorrow for that one.
And The Rock goes into the Hall of Fame, which, you know.
Without question. He has to.
He should. And L.A. is just such a natural fit. Okay, let's wrap up here, unless you have any other thoughts from the week of WWE.
I just want to say that, you know, you and I, you were at SmackDown. If you didn't see Jimmy on the television, he had some really cool moments there. The Daniel Bryan one doing the yes, yes, yes was awesome. A lot of the guys gave you a high five. It was really cool to see you there, James, on TV. We had a couple of signs, too, over on the other side of the row. But I do want to say, just to the fans that listen to this podcast, I got a lot of people that said hello. Not just there, it also at Evolve I was at on Sunday night. A lot of really nice compliments, James. And it really meant a lot to hear that from fans who go out of their way to listen to this show week by week, because they always say it's a nice way to start my week. I see you guys tape a lot Sunday, Mondays, and so forth. So it's a really good way to get things going, and you guys provide good insight. So it was nice to hear that from fans and put some faces to their Twitter profiles and so forth.
You're welcome for being your wrestling podcast messiah. No, see, I had similar interactions with people at SmackDown, just fans of the podcast, fans of the station. It's always appreciated. It's always good stuff. We had a good time. We hung out at Kowloon after. You know, Andy takes great care of us. Braun Strowman was there. And Braun Strowman's got a WrestleMania party because he supports the Apple a Day charity. So if you're going down to Tampa, you want to check out Braun Strowman and his WrestleMania party. He just announced actually today that Ron Killings will be performing live. Of course, he's R-Truth. And you can find out more at, here's the Twitter handle, at Magic City Live. And live is spelled with a one instead of an I. But Braun will be there. EC3 will be there. Drake Maverick. Ron Killings, are also known as R-Truth. But Braun Strowman's a big supporter, as we found out, with the Apple A Day Foundation. So that's kind of a cool thing.
Absolutely.
And he's super nice guy.
We may have more on Braun Strowman soon. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah, we might have more with Braun Strowman, but we're putting him over here in his charity and his WrestleMania week stuff. That's Absolutely. Thursday night. So if you want to, I put it out on Twitter a little bit this afternoon when I saw it, to help him out, because he's a good dude, good dude, and he took pictures with kids.
That's awesome.
Which is what you're supposed to do, and you know he took a picture with a 39-year-old kid in an Intercontinental belt that he probably shouldn't have, but you know, it's all good. So let's wrap up here with the WrestleMania match that everybody should watch. Mike, I'll defer to you. You can take the lead the lead here.
All right, so I'm going to go back 22 years ago this March, and that would be WrestleMania 14, March 29th, 1998, at the then Fleet Center in Boston, which I was blessed to be part of. I was there as a fan, and it was really my favorite event I've ever been to in my life. But the match I'm talking about is The Undertaker with his victory over Kane, and it was a 17-minute match. We know here was Kane debuting a few months before at the Hell in the Cell, the story told behind it, younger brother of The Undertaker, you know, and then the parents and so forth. Just so much good storytelling here. Bruce Pritchard's favorite character of Kane as he developed him. Paul Bearer turning on The Undertaker a couple of years before. So Taker's on his own. But just so much, just athleticism. Taker going, flying through the ropes at one point, going on to the broadcast table, you know, pile drivers, choke slams. Pete Rose came out for the ring announcement, and just the crowd popped for him. The boo, I should say, was hysterical because he took a shot at the Red Sox. But when Kane did the tombstone on him, people just exploded. It was incredible. But these two put on a great show here for the size that they have in the ring, nearly 7 feet tall, both of them. Choke slam, power bombs, you know, the tombstones. Really appreciate the size of these two monsters in their prime, WrestleMania 1998. Now, The Undertaker did win, but afterwards, Kane did do a tombstone on the Taker and actually gave him it was right on top of the head there from a chair, so you saw the blood after. Kind of didn't feel like a win for the Taker after that, but it set up so many good matches down the line between these two, Undertaker and Kane, for many years to come. Check it out.
So the thing that I remembered from this match was it taking three tombstones for Undertaker to win. And Jim Ross said after Kane kicked out of the first one that nobody's kicked out of the tombstone,
yep.
Which I kind of remember actually being accurate because that feels like a very protected finish. And actually what I actually really liked about the finish was Kane kicked out at like 3 1/4 on the third tombstone. So it's like, oh, the Undertaker just squeaked by his brother Kane, which obviously continued the story and, you know, for years to come. But the kick out at 3 used in the right instance is an excellent thing. And when we get to my match here in a second, I'll explain it. But I liked that match. I liked it because I assumed Undertaker was going to win, but I didn't know because Kane was just blowing doors on everybody leading up to this match. So I agree. It was a good spectacle match, as they say, a spectacle.
Really was a spectacle. Yeah. And then Paul Bearer out there on the outside and him being a heel manager was pretty good character that he had at that time.
The Druids were great.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
The Druid entrance with the flames and everything was great. Of course, Undertaker also, after, you know, getting the beat down, threatened Shawn Michaels because Shawn wouldn't do business with Steve Austin, but that's another mythical story. Yep. So my match that you should go back and watch is from WrestleMania 10. It's Bret Hart versus Owen Hart. Owen Hart wins the opening match of WrestleMania 10. And, of course, at the end of WrestleMania 10, Bret would go on to win the WWF Championship. And Owen looks at him in disgust because Owen opened the show and he beats his brother Bret. And Bret outshined him to close the show. Owen couldn't get out of his own shadow. The build for this started at Survivor Series, where Owen was the only Hart brother eliminated for that Hart Foundation, Hart brother team. Owen teased a turn. Bret instead suggested that they team and challenge for the tag team titles at the Royal Rumble. Bret's leg was so badly injured that he couldn't tag, but Owen saw it as Bret being selfish that he wouldn't tag. And then Owen kicked the leg out of Bret's leg, and Bret would go on that night to win the Royal Rumble match along with Lex Luger, causing a double title defense at WrestleMania by then WWF champion Yokozuna. The Bret versus Owen brother versus brother match was one that Bret didn't want, but because of Lex and Brett winning the Royal Rumble. There were two WWF Championship matches, so Brett had to wrestle a comparable competitor. No, that doesn't make sense. He had to wrestle somebody before he got to Yokozuna, and it was Brett, and so Brett was forced into this brother versus brother match. And Vince and King were so good on commentary. Lawler just slandering the Hart family name. And Vince defending Brett's stance about not wanting to have the match. And how his head might not be into it because it's his own brother. It's a match he didn't want. Brett's got a championship fight on the line. And this, just the details in this match. Brett's out wrestling Owen. And Owen's just doing every little dirty trick in the book to keep the advantage. And then once Brett's got the advantage, Brett tries to dive to the outside on Owen, hits it, but at the same time injuring his knee, which gave Owen Hart a clear target throughout the match if he got in trouble, and he took advantage of it. Very easy to follow. Fabulous match that I think still holds up to this day. The finish was a flash pin. It was a victory roll, and Owen just stepped into it, put his knees down, got a three count, and Brett kicked out just after three. There's that kick out after three. And Owen couldn't believe he got a three count. He looked at that referee and was like, really? I pinned him? Like, that was a three count? And then once he realized, yeah, that happened, Brett's like all distraught because he realized he just lost. And then Owen gloated about it, and he should have. Just awesome match. And at the time, it was in the conversation with the Steamboat Savage WrestleMania 3 match. But just awesome, awesome stuff. I think you should go back and watch that match, WrestleMania 10.
Yeah, it's still up there, too, as in my book, a top five WrestleMania match of all time. You know, in years later, we knew what happened with the famous pile driver that Owen Hart gave to Stone Cold Steve Austin. He actually did the same thing to Bret Hart earlier in that match, too. Looking back on that, after seeing what he did to Stone Cold Steve Austin, it just kind of makes you cringe for a second. It's like, oh, my God. But obviously, Bret was okay. It was a safe bump. And, you know, a good match all around. Good storytelling because Bret, that knee there, and here they are. He wins the championship later in the night. And that set up some really good matches between the two. SummerSlam, they had a great cage match. Owen goes on to become King of the Ring later in that year. So Owen, man, he's a technical wrestler. Obviously, he's deceased now. Appreciate him more than ever before. But that was a damn good one to watch.
There's a sneaky good WrestleMania 5 match. It's the Blue Blazer against Kurt Hennig. It's Owen Hart against Mr. Perfect. It's nice. A nice little six-minute match if you ever want to see, like, Kurt Hennig giving Owen Hart more than he should have in a match. WrestleMania 5, sneaky little bonus extra there. Each week you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 985thesportshub.com and on the 985 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. For Mike Riley at Sarge985, the show's Twitter account is at WrestleCast985. You can email the show, WrestleCast985@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at IamJamesStewart. Next week, we'll be doing a post-Elimination Chamber show. WWE has another pay-per-view. And if it sucks, we'll do a regular newsy show. But in the meantime, we send you off with the Inner Circle Choir.
You are beautiful on the inside. You are innocent, personified. And I will drag you down and sell you out. Run away. I am cold like December snow. I am carved out, this soul made of stone.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.